I'm Jeff Watts, and welcome to Advances in Eye Care Spring 2017. In this edition, we focus on some recent innovations in eye health assessment and ongoing research helping to reduce ocular infections. We'll explore developments in eye tracking technology, discussing both the clinical and commercial applications of this increasingly important technique. But to begin with, we look at some exciting work being done which may one day address the problems of infection and ocular discomfort in contact lens wearers. Contact lenses and their care have evolved greatly over the last few decades. However, wearers can still be troubled by symptoms of ocular irritation, a major reason for people dropping out of lens wear. Furthermore, contact lenses still increase the risk of ocular infections and inflammation. Tear film constituents are known to be deposited on and within the contact lens material, contributing to these concerns. Clinical researchers, lens designers, and lens manufacturers are trying to find new ways to address this. Researchers at the University of Manchester have been looking at tear film proteins and how they might be exploited to prevent contact lens infection and inflammation. Here, Professor Philip Morgan, Professor Curtis Dobson, and Dr. Bianca Price discuss their recent research.
Hello, my name's Philip Morgan. I'm Professor of Optometry at the University of Manchester, and today I'm joined by two colleagues from our institution. We're going to be discussing contact lenses, but specifically the interaction of contact lenses with the tear film and really what current thoughts are. In fact, how might this be a good thing or indeed a bad thing? My colleagues are Dr. Bianca Price and Professor Curtis Dobson, and I'm going to turn first to Curtis and ask Curtis, can you just tell us what your background is and why you became interested in this area of contact lenses?
Thanks, Phil. Yes, so I'm Professor Curtis Dobson from the Faculty of Biology, Medicine and Health here at Manchester. I run a group called the Medical Device Biology Group, which focuses on medical device infection. Actually, I didn't originally come from instruction. I was originally a neuroscientist working on Alzheimer's disease, of all things. And it's a long story, but essentially I discovered some molecules that had antimicrobial activity, and we decided to try to apply those as medical device coatings. And in fact, there's not just contact lenses. A number of medical devices, disposable devices that are used in medicine, are linked to problems with infection. So things like catheters and wound dressings, although they're very mundane devices, they often become infected, and that can lead to a lot of serious consequences for the patient. For example, if you wear a catheter for 30 days, you're almost guaranteed to get an infection. So, and similarly with contact lenses, you can get infections, as you know, and I'm sure the audience know, but these are very rare. And so, it's interesting to understand why there are such differences between these different devices. And so our group really focuses on understanding the biology that underlies that. And contact lenses in particular we're interested in because they're a very convenient system to look at this. You can easily access them. You can work with them over very short timescales. Unlike things like orthopedic implants or catheters, which are much more difficult to work with. So these are a great model system to help us understand medical device infection. And that's really why we've particularly focused on contact lenses and why we work with your group and others in this area.
Yeah, I suppose ultimately a contact lens is a very interesting system. It's sitting in the tear film, which is complex and fascinating. So perhaps by exploring a contact lens, in fact, we perhaps can learn about other interactions between medical devices and the human body. Bianca, I'll ask you next to just tell us a bit about your background, your expertise, and what techniques you've been employing to study this area of the interaction of the tear film with contact lenses.
Okay, well, I'm a research fellow. I've trained in microbiology and molecular biology, and I have an interest in modelling host-pathogen interactions. I work in the medical device biology group with Curtis. We've been looking at removing proteins from contact lenses and then looking at their antimicrobial activity, as well as what kinds of proteins you get on the contact lens, and also the structure of the proteins. Proteins are normally folded into a particular shape, and when they become unfolded, we can measure that with some techniques in the lab.
Okay, well, I think we'll be coming back and talking about structure of protein a bit later on. But proteins are very central to this discussion today. So Curtis, can you just take us back to basics a little bit? What are proteins? And what role do you see that they play in the tear film?
There are four main types of biological molecules, I guess. There are lipids, carbohydrates, nucleic acids, and proteins. So lipids and carbohydrates are mostly involved either in structure or in energy and control of energy. And nucleic acids are involved in storage of information in biological systems, whereas proteins are largely involved with functional activity. So they're essentially the machines in biology that actually do things. So we could see tear proteins as the components in tears that are active and are able to interact with other biomolecules and by doing so enable the tears to function in the way they do. Just briefly, more about the chemistry. So proteins are made up of repeating units called amino acids, and there are 20 natural amino acids that they can be made from. And these building blocks are linked together in a long chain. If you get a few of these building blocks together, that's called a peptide, and we'll come back to that a little later, but peptides are quite important in their own right. When you get to longer chains, you have polypeptides or proteins, and these tend to have the more complex structures, which Bianca alluded to there, which then gives them their function. So that's what proteins are, and in tears, there are a number of proteins. There are probably 400 or, I think, more, you know, proteins that have been discovered in tears, so it's a very complex system. There are four major ones that are related to the area we're interested in, which is antimicrobial function. So lysozyme, lactoferrin, lipocalin, and immunoglobulin A are the ones that are most associated with fighting infection. And it's interesting that the tear film itself is relatively sterile compared to other similar secretions in the body. So, for example, the saliva and in the mouth, that's actually filled with bacteria, whereas the tears are actually pretty aseptic, pretty sterile. There aren't many bacteria there, and that's potentially partly due to the function of the tear protein. So that's debated a little, but essentially that's the case. Lysozyme, for example, is the major one, and it's one that perhaps people in the contact lens industry may have heard the most about. And this is involved in cleaving peptidoglycan, which is the component of bacterial cell walls, that type of bacterial cell walls. So it has a direct antimicrobial activity. And it's also found in other things like hen egg white and in other secretions as well, like saliva and other fluids. And it's a widely studied protein in biology. So these proteins exist in the tear film to allow the tear film to operate biologically and to have various biological functions. And, of course, if you wear a contact lens, that can interfere with that because those proteins can deposit on contact lenses and that can result in the lens itself developing function that it maybe shouldn't have or potentially depleting the tears of some of the proteins that should be there having function. And that depends on the lens type. So a charged lens will tend to absorb a lot of proteins, so particularly lysozyme, which is a charged protein. So that absorbs sticks very well to charged lenses, whereas a silicon hydrogel doesn't tend to absorb as much protein. It's much lower, maybe two orders of magnitude lower, maybe 100 times lower than a charged lens. And in fact, silicon hydrogels are more associated with association with lipid on the whole. So that's kind of a description of the whole system.
I think it is fair to say then that the eye goes to great lengths to protect itself. I mean, ultimately, sight is our primary sense, and so it makes sense that the systems have evolved such that any infection of the ocular surface is extremely rare, because that would put us at threat as a human, I suppose. I think current understanding is that proteins play an important part of this defence process. Well, I guess we should perhaps now just move to what a lot of this means from a clinical point of view. My research primarily relates to the clinical performance of contact lenses. We've become very interested in recent years in two main areas of performance, those being the inflammatory response to contact lenses, and infection would be included as part of that, and also comfort during contact lens wear. And I think it's become apparent in recent times that actually tear film proteins relate to both of these areas. Now, what's interesting is it used to be years ago when I was, certainly when I was training in the late 1980s into the 1990s, we would go quite a long way as clinicians to remove proteins from contact lenses. We would associate proteins always with perhaps reduced vision as the proteins age, perhaps become denatured and become white, make the lens surface become a little opaque perhaps. So effect on vision, we used to think it had a relationship with discomfort too. And so we would go to some lengths to remove protein from contact lenses. And this might be news to younger practitioners, but the older folk will remember that we used to actually treat contact lenses to try and remove proteins. But I think things are changing now. I think it is true to say that proteins are related to the inflammatory response and possibly discomfort as well, but it's a more nuanced story than we used to believe. I think specifically there is a sense that proteins which have changed, that is denatured proteins on a contact lens, act to make things worse in terms of the likelihood of inflammatory response and discomfort. Certainly on this latter point of discomfort, recent work from the University of Waterloo has found an association between the level of protein denaturation and subjective comfort. So people who complain more of discomfort when their contact lenses are assessed are found to have greater levels of protein denaturation. So this term, I think, is going to become increasingly part of the lexicon of those of us educating future contact lens practitioners. And so it's important that we understand this. And I'm going to turn to you again, Bianca. This is your area of expertise. Can you just tell us a little bit more specifically about what denaturation of proteins means? What actually is going on here, and what, from a functional standpoint, might be a consequence of this?
So as Curtis mentioned, proteins are made up of chains of amino acids, and these chains fold and coil to give the protein a 3D structure. And that 3D structure is very important for the function of the protein, so it gets a shape. So for example, lysozyme is an important antimicrobial protein, and it's shaped a bit like Pac-Man. And the way it works is it chews through the membranes of bacteria. When it becomes denatured or unfolded, it loses that shape, and that means it no longer has its function. Also, when proteins lose their shape, the body no longer recognizes them as components of self. So you sometimes get an immune reaction against the protein itself because it's been unfolded. So in these two ways, loss of antimicrobial activity and also becoming pro-inflammatory, the native structure of proteins is very important.
So in fact, in a contact lens context, trying to keep proteins in their normal, natural, non-denatured shape is really important, as you've described, Bianca. Curtis, so we can see the potential benefits of trying to keep proteins in their natural state. How can we use this information to advance the field, make contact lenses better in some way?
I guess this information is useful in many different ways, and we've been involved in a number of projects to look at this over the last few years. One area we've looked at is the area of solutions which support tear proteins in different ways. So multipurpose solutions sometimes can cause denaturation of tear proteins. I mean, the obvious contact lens solution that does this, it's not a multi-purpose solution, but it's peroxide, which is obviously quite devastating for tear proteins. But also multi-purpose solutions, which are far milder, can also affect tear protein structure too. So we found that there are certain multi-purpose solutions that result in tear proteins having more activity after they've been exposed to that multi-purpose solution after repeat exposure. And there are various mechanisms we've uncovered behind that to deal with some of the components of those solutions. So that means that one could engineer multi-purpose solutions to keep the tear proteins in really good shape and to keep them functioning the way they should, and potentially stop them sticking to lenses and so on if that were important. So that's one area. The second area is to engineer contact lens surfaces potentially to keep proteins in native conformation when they stick to those lens surfaces, or potentially to attract proteins which have a beneficial function, maybe antimicrobial proteins, to those surfaces. And that's something that we've begun to look at, and is, I guess, at an early stage, but you know, potentially in the longer term could yield lenses which sit in the eye and either are invisible to the tear film, in the sense biochemically invisible, in that they don't influence the structure of any tear proteins in the tear film, or alternatively self-select so that they select antimicrobial proteins to stick to them and then become antimicrobial on their own right by just sitting in the tear film. So that's another potentially quite exciting area. A third area we've looked at actually relates to some peptides I haven't mentioned yet, which are peptides called defensins. So these peptides are shorter proteins. I mentioned that if you have a few amino acids in a chain without much structure usually, then those are called peptides. And there are peptides called defensins, which are found in the tear film and in other secretions, which have antimicrobial function, and they have rather different function from some of the larger proteins. But they are often very, very potent and very broadly acting. We've been looking at some equivalent peptides which we make synthetically. So we make these in the lab, and they have very similar function to defensins. Again, they're actually more active than defensins, and they also stick very readily to contact lens surfaces. So we've been working for a number of years now on developing those peptides, those artificial peptides, which actually originally came from a human protein. That's where we discovered them, but we've been looking at using those as a way of coating contact lenses and, again, preventing eye infections ultimately by providing an antimicrobial lens, alternatively a contact lens solution that will top up the lens and make it antimicrobial. So you can see that I think understanding these processes is very important for all areas of contact lens science, and, you know, there are ways in which this knowledge can be used to engineer new approaches that, you know, potentially could ultimately influence both comfort and infection.
Something else we used to believe and used to teach actually was how we could grade deposition from the tear film on a contact lens, and there are still grading scale systems that exist that allow us to do that. But I think in the modern environment where people are frequently, of course, replacing their lenses on a daily disposable basis and perhaps at worst on a monthly replace basis, the level of deposition and more particularly the level of denaturation of proteins is really too small for us to be able to visualize anything on the slit lamp. You know, it's well known that some contact lens materials, in particular the ionic materials, will attract really a large level of proteins very quickly, within a few hours, certainly by the end of the first day of wear. There's a very high level of proteins in the material and on the surface of the contact lens material. But we can't see that with the slit lamp. This is transparent. Now, over time, if they become denatured, they change their shape, they can become opaque. But nowadays, that's really very extreme, and we don't see that anymore. So I think the use of a slit lamp microscope in trying to understand deposition with contact lenses is really quite limited. And I think that's knowledge that's really important for us as optometrists to understand.
So we did a clinical study where we had 12 subjects, and we extracted proteins off their contact lenses and looked at what kinds of proteins deposited. And we found that there were huge differences in the amount of protein. Some people had 10 or 100 times more protein deposited on their contact lenses than others. And also the types of protein. So lysozyme, for example, some people have an awful lot of lysozyme in their tears, and they have much more lysozyme deposited on their contact lenses than another person. But the mixture of proteins that deposits on the lenses is also important. So we talk about lysozyme a lot, but there are lots of other important antimicrobial proteins and immune proteins that also deposit on the contact lenses.
Well, thanks, Curtis, and thanks, Bianca, for bringing both your basic science and indeed applied science to the story here. I think from a clinical science point of view, it's clear that the remaining challenges that we face with making improved and more successful contact lenses, which I think primarily are the presence of inflammatory responses and discomfort, particularly end of day discomfort, are going to be solved down the line to some extent by a better understanding of this whole area, how the tear film interacts with contact lenses, how proteins and perhaps other elements of the tear film interact with contact lens surfaces, and from there how we can exploit the properties of proteins in particular, perhaps leaving them in their natural state and exploiting the natural defense systems of the surface of the eye to improve these consequences of contact lens wear. Perhaps we can finish just by looking to the future a bit, the sort of developments we're going to see in contact lens research over the coming years, particularly what we're doing here in Manchester. Curtis, Bianca, what other work that we've not already been discussing are you up to at the moment?
I guess one of the difficulties and limitations we have to date in looking at contact lenses is that we're generally reduced to looking at lenses that have been worn clinically, and we haven't as yet devised a good model for assessing infection associated with contact lenses that is outside the clinic. So one of the exciting projects that's just begun in Manchester recently is work to develop an artificial cornea complete with the tear film. So essentially we have a cornea which is reconstituted with collagen. So we have a stroma, and then we have some epithelial cells that are growing over the surface of that, and we're also actually re-engineering the tear film above that, and potentially we would be putting contact lenses into that system. So we can add bacteria, and Bianca will be involved in that, and we'll be able to actually look at the stages of infection of the cornea and potentially look at this with or without a contact lens or in different solutions. So really begin to understand some of the real fine detail of how this process works and how contact lenses interfere with that.
Work's been done on the way that bacteria actually infect the cornea. And so by making a cornea in a dish, we can create reproducible conditions that we can manipulate and look more deeply into how bacteria are able to penetrate through into the cornea. Another application of that model might be to look at components of dead bacteria as well as live bacteria, and for example, denatured proteins or lipids, and see what might be causing discomfort during contact lens wear.
That's very exciting if we can do that, yeah. And Phil, I think you've been working with the Graphene Institute a little. Is that right? I think that sounds very exciting work, potentially.
Yeah, I think one huge area for contact lenses in the future is going to come about because we can now start to put circuitry into contact lenses. A lot will come of this, I think, because we're going to be able to perhaps control some of the refractive properties of contact lenses by having circuitry and power in the lens. And so there are a number of exciting opportunities there. But a key element to this is actually how we make the lens conductive. So if we think about a computer screen, the way that computer screens work is there are liquid crystal elements, as everybody knows, but there is an area of conductive layer in the screen. And this is the part that actually, of course, moves the electric current about within the screen. So we need to do something similar in a contact lens, but it's a bit more complicated because that conductive layer needs to be transparent, ideally needs to be flexible, it needs to be non-toxic, and a number of other properties. And one candidate material for this is graphene, which of course is a very major area of research interest here at the University of Manchester. We have indeed put graphene onto a contact lens surface and been able to show that it will indeed conduct electric current through the lens. It's at a very early stage, but we have published on this. And, you know, I think over future years, we will see something like graphene or perhaps some other conductive layer into a contact lens and becoming really a fundamental part in the electric circuitry that I think lenses in the future will contain for a whole range of different applications, all the way from vision correction to, who knows, entertainment and augmented reality and that sort of thing. So that, I think, is a very interesting area of research and something I'm excited about for the future.
Thank you, Philip, Curtis and Bianca.